Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 514. Science Faction, your weekly Corona update. The numbers are as follows for today, November 22nd, 2020. Worldwide infections, 58.75 million. U.S. infections, 12.475 million. Worldwide deaths, 1.39 million. U.S. deaths, 262,000. Interestingly, I started talking about this last week. I started looking at active cases, and that is certainly where the U.S. is taking off, as we can see, because we have crazy daily infection numbers. We currently have 4.8 million active infections. The next runner-up is France at just under 2 million, so we are blowing away the competition. And that's getting worse and worse because our daily infected numbers are going up like crazy. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on, but like the numbers right now are nuts. Right now, the United States is a COVID hotspot of the world. Now, I do want to bring something up because we talked about Belgium a little bit in our main show, and I actually got a message from a Belgian listener. This is one of the cool things about having listeners all around the world. And, you know, we chatted back and forth, and he brought up the fact that Belgium is having a huge COVID issue, which I've known for a while because I follow the data, and they've actually had the highest per capita death rate for a little bit. And I was still looking into exactly why that was and couldn't quite explain it, so I hadn't made it part of our coronavirus update yet. But if you look at it right now, Belgium is leading the world in per capita deaths at 1,337 deaths per million people, which you might go like, well, maybe they have, for some reason, they have more COVID, and so that's why they have more deaths. Well, they do have more, but they're also only sixth in the world in terms of per capita cases. So it's not like they have the most cases per people, and that's why they have the most deaths. And I was talking to him, again, one of the cool things about having somebody who is there, boots on the ground, is I was talking to him about, you know, what's going on there, and he said, it's weird because everybody wears masks, and they have for quite some time. We're pretty strict about it. So I started diving into the numbers to see kind of what's going on in Belgium right now. And I started looking at their infection rate, their case rate, when they got all their deaths, et cetera, et cetera. Because again, maybe this is an artifact of something like, remember when it hit Italy before it hit anywhere else and nobody had seen it before. It essentially came right from China and it hit Italy and they had no idea what to do. So all of a sudden there was a whole bunch of deaths. Well, that's a different thing than, you know, if you had a whole bunch of deaths in February and March than if you were having them now. So I looked at it. And their deaths are more recent. They seem to have peaked on October 30th and have actually dropped dramatically since then. So Belgium is actually getting its shit under control. It was very bad, but it is getting much, much better quite quickly, actually. And so this might actually be an artifact of a problem that's already solved, though much more recently than a place like Italy. So what's causing this? What's going on? Well, it seems like it's a multi-pronged issue. First and foremost is they count deaths differently than a lot of the surrounding countries like the UK. In places like the UK, you have to actually have had a positive COVID test within like 14 days of dying for them to count you as dead. And so there aren't not nearly as many people counted dead as a place like Belgium, where not only do you not need a positive test within 14 days, you don't need a positive test at all. If the doctor believes that you died from a COVID-related cause, you get counted. Now, what I want to emphasize here is some people would be like, oh, so you're overestimating the deaths in Belgium? And I would counter that with, no. Belgium's just being honest. They're underestimating it in places like the UK and here in the United States. By the way, depending on what state you're in, because it varies from state to state in terms of how they're counting it. Chances are, there's not a lot of people dying of exactly like COVID symptoms that don't have COVID, but there are a lot of people dying of COVID who haven't happened to get a test within 14 days of their death. So I think what we're seeing in Belgium is, yes, they have a higher death rate than average, but also we're seeing that they are just being more honest with their numbers than a lot of places around them. So in comparison, it makes them look like they're having more of a problem. Secondarily, they have very high population density, which means that things will go through the population very quickly and you'll have issues. But really what seems to be going on is a weird quirk of their government. And this was something I didn't know before doing this research, which is I had an idea that Belgium had, you know, different languages they spoke. I actually just thought it was French and German. Turns out French, German, and then they speak Dutch up in the north. And all three of these different parts of the country are kind of ununified to the point where they haven't had a unified federal government in like 600 days or something. And because they don't have a unified federal government, they don't have that kind of top-down processes to effectively quash something like this, something that we here in the US kind of know about. And they have a lot of infighting between those groups, again, something that we here in the US know about. And so those kind of factors seems to have combined the way they count deaths, the unique situation of their federal government and how that is working in the current time, their population density, all of that seems to have combined. And as you might have heard when I talked about, you know, active cases, number two is France. And France does not have nearly the population of the United States. So if France is number two in the world in terms of active cases, clearly France, which shares a border with Belgium, there's something going on in that area in terms of an outbreak right now. So that's the very interesting and complicated case of Belgium. Let's move on to the articles for this week. The biggest one is obviously the Moderna vaccine. And I want to start by saying, I think there's some rule where every time I put out a coronavirus episode, within 12 hours, some huge coronavirus news has to come out that then makes that episode almost obsolete. That's what happened with the last vaccine. That's what happened with this vaccine. I just published the last episode. Hey, look at this Pfizer vaccine. It's amazing. I publish it. And I think like 9 hours after I publish it, they release the Moderna phase 3 results. But this is another great set of data, super encouraging. This vaccine, another mRNA vaccine, which we talked about last week. If you don't know about mRNA vaccines, please go back and listen to that because they're actually very, very interesting and new. These are the first ones we're really using. And the effectiveness seems fantastic. They published a 94.5% effectiveness rating. We talked about how those ratings are calculated last week as well, so I won't go over that again. Remember, Pfizer published it as 90% last week. Well, by the way, shortly after this came out, Pfizer came back and like, we found some more data. It's actually 95%. So we beat you by 0.5%. I know you thought you beat us, Moderna, for a few days, but Pfizer came back. Regardless, both of those seem to be way more effective than we had thought we could do, especially in such a short amount of time. Very, very good news. This is also a two-part vaccine, but there is some very interesting news about the Moderna one, which is unlike the Pfizer one, which we talked about last week, had to be kept at very cold temperatures, like negative 70 Celsius. I think it's negative 94 Fahrenheit. Very, very cold for cold chain storage. Now, once it gets to the location, it can just be kept in a regular freezer. But for the majority of its time, it has to be kept there. And then it can be kept outside of that for, I think, like 5 days and can be kept in a regular freezer. This Moderna vaccine does not have to be nearly as cold. In fact, it can go through regular cold chain storage, regular medical freezers, and then be kept in, like, I think, standard refrigeration or whatever for like 30 days. So very, very, very cool. The reason they were able to do that, even though it's an mRNA vaccine, which we talked about last week, you know, that was the reason it has to be kept so cold. These are very fragile vaccines. It doesn't take a lot to essentially denature them, and cold stops those processes from happening, those chemical reactions. And so this was a way to preserve this, what you would call a very delicate thing. The reason they don't have to do this with the Moderna one is they've developed a special lipid layer that locks everything in such a way that it doesn't need that same type of cold chain storage, which might be a huge, well, if it's definitely true, will be a huge advantage over the Pfizer one because you won't need these cold chain things. Now, since then, Pfizer's also come out to try and save some of the stock value and been like, by the way, we've already developed a device that will be part of the cold chain storage and it'll keep things cold. It's called the pizza box and it keeps everything in their temperature really cold. So you don't have to worry about it. You load them up in a truck and take them and you'll be fine. Either way, both of these things coming out are great news because keep in mind, we're going to need a lot of vaccines around the world. So we have 6 major U.S. companies that are finishing up their phase 3 trials, 200 vaccines that are in clinical trials right now. Bring them all. Let's get them, right? Some of them might be good for kids. Some might be good for adults. Some of them might need cold chain storage, blah, 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 blah. This is still a 2-part vaccine, like I said. So you're going to need to get 2 separate shots. This helps boost the immune system to make sure it doesn't wear off. But this is really, really good news. Again, even if you didn't have the advantages of not needing the cold chain storage and whatnot, the fact that we now have 2 vaccines that have gone through phase 3 trials and come out with 95% effectiveness is better than we could have possibly imagined a couple months ago. And it also dramatically increases the chance that you, the person listening to this podcast right now, will have access to a vaccine sometime in the near future. Because again, if 2 companies are pumping these out at crazy paces to get to like 1.something billion by the end of 2021, well, then you got double the chances. And by the way, we're not done yet. It's not like these 2 are it. Like I said, there are 6 that are finishing up phase 3 trials, 6 major corporations that are finishing up phase 3 trials in the United States. These are just the 2 to be first done and first published. It looks like the FDA is going to grant emergency use, and at least the Pfizer vaccine will be distributed before the end of 2020. Really, really neat stuff. Like I've said before, this 2 shall pass. The vaccine is the way this will most likely happen. Obviously, we're going to have issues with people who don't want to take vaccines, you know, cold chain storage, et cetera, et cetera. But if you live in a major metropolitan area in especially the U.S., but quite frankly, coming soon, any first world nation, chances are you will have access to this vaccine, one of these vaccines, before the end of 2021. And while that sounds like a long time away, keep in mind, each time somebody gets vaccinated, that takes one person out of that the chain that could infect you. So it's not like you are totally unsafe until you get that shot or the second shot or whatever, and then you're safe. Every person who gets a shot makes you safer. So between the second we start giving people these shots and, you know, the time you get the vaccine, you are getting increasingly safer as time goes on and less people can transmit it to you. Because again, let's say everybody in the world got it and you didn't get it yet. Well, chances are you're almost as good as vaccinated, right? Because of herd immunity, it's not going to be going through anybody to infect you in the first place. So from that good news, let's move on to some bad ones. We have horribly surging cases here in the United States. We have already instituted lockdowns on state levels around the country. We are currently under a lockdown here in California that includes limited services, not being able to travel during curfew hours, which is 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. unless you're going to the grocery store or the pharmacy or you're going to work for some kind of needed job or something like that. That might seem weird. Like, why are you choosing that time at night? And it turns out that basically a lot of this transmission is going on at gatherings at nighttime, i.e. bars, restaurants, house parties, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not a random thing to do. We are at absolutely bonkers numbers here in the United States. The last few days, we have had between 180,000 and 190,000 new coronavirus cases a day. A day! That's more than a lot of countries have had since January. It's fucking crazy! What's going on here is nuts. Now, a lot of this is in the Midwest and the Great Plains, more rural areas. We've been talking about this since March, that this was going to be an urban virus for a while and then sweep through the rural areas and cause trouble, and this is really going on. Places like North Dakota are overrun. Some of their hospitals are literally over capacity. They have tents in the parking lot for these people. It is crazy. Right now, one out of every 14 people in North Dakota have been infected by COVID. It's nuts numbers. Now, why is this going on? We're not 100% sure. We can point to little things like, oh, what about these rallies? What about these events? What about elections? What about this? But the fact of the matter is, this is just kind of spreading out to its peak, and we're at places where in these rural areas, quite frankly, people don't wear masks. I'm in an incredibly urban environment. I live right near downtown San Diego, the sixth largest city in the United States, and I go outside and I see tons of people not wearing masks. You go to a place like North Dakota or South Dakota, you're very lucky to see a person wearing a mask. So basically, as it's spreading to these areas, it's just going through like wildfire. The fact that it's now cold in those regions and people are indoors, respiratory viruses automatically go up when you're indoors, recycled air, closed environments, et cetera, et cetera. This is a real bad recipe because it's really hard to put this genie back in the bottle. It is way harder to go from 200,000 infections per day down to 5,000 infections per day than it is to go the other way, you know, 200,000. So we are in a really bad spot. Right now, the United States is the epicenter of COVID infections on the face of the earth because the virus has only been around for a year. It's the epicenter on the face of the earth. It's the all-time epicenter on the face of the earth. No place has ever had more infections at any time of COVID-19 than the United States does right now. It is terrifying. I think of it every time I leave my house with my N95 respirator, looking around. I'm not even doing the thing anymore where I politely keep social distancing. I'm wearing my mask, and even if somebody else is wearing my mask, I'm gonna front kick you if you come within 6 feet of me. Like, get the fuck away. It is crazy right now. And these infection rates are just bound to go up because Thanksgiving is coming up this week. That's a time when people travel. We're already seeing huge gatherings at like O'Hare Airport in Chicago. And this stuff is just going to proliferate through families. And the really sad thing is this is the first major holiday that we have had, like family gathering holiday that we have had since all this started. Obviously, there's 4th of July and Easter and stuff, but those aren't nearly as big a major family gathering holidays in the United States. This is. And the problem with that is that's going to expose a lot of elderly people in families who otherwise have not been exposed. This is going to expose them to the virus, especially that it's indoors. If you're in the northern part of this country during Thanksgiving, it is cold as fuck and you will be inside, except if you step outside to go smoke a cigarette or beat your wife. I don't know. But like the point of the matter is there is going to be most likely an increase from this level, which is crazy because we're already at levels we never thought we would see. When you look at like CDC estimates, when this stuff first started, I was alarmist in thinking that we might get up somewhere around 70,000 infections a day. That was worst case scenario. We're at 200 motherfucking thousand and getting worse. It is about as crazy as it can be. And here's the thing. This can all be stopped. If everybody put on masks tomorrow, if everybody social distanced, we could just end this. But we don't. It is the most bizarre choice of a nation to make. And I know there are other nations out there that are also not necessarily doing the right thing, and they're also having increased infection rates, et cetera, et cetera. But right now, that's kind of a false dichotomy compared to what is going on in the United States. And lastly, I want to cover something that I had to actually debate whether or not I was going to cover, because I don't want to give it more attention than deserved, but I've had two people mention it to me, and so I figure it is worth talking about, which is crackpots with degrees and the dumb people who follow them. Now, I'm not talking about somebody who got their degree from a diploma mill or something like that, like not a Ken Ham or something. I'm talking about a person with a legitimate degree. So in this particular case, we're going to be talking about somebody named Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, but I'm just going to call him Roger from now on because I think he kind of has shat on the doctor title, so we'll just call him that. He is a physician. He got his medical degree in the UK and then came and did his pathology work in Canada and has since become like the CEO of a private company there. You'll see a bunch of articles that quote him and say he was the head of the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons, and he was this and that. He wasn't. He wasn't any of those things. Those are all just lies. He was just a physician who trained in pathology and whatnot. But he has come out online with these incendiary videos claiming this is nothing more than a bad flu. We shouldn't have anything closed down. Masks don't work. He claims he's an expert, even though he very much is not. He says the government is overreaching by making us all wear masks or quarantine. And that it's the greatest hoax ever perpetrated. Now, let's go over a few things. First of all, this guy got his original degree in the early 70s from Cambridge, and then came to Canada and got his pathology certification in like 76, right? So again, we're dealing with somebody who got their degree back when all cars had carburetors. There was no such thing as the internet, and you read 10 books to get your medical degree. So take that with a grain of salt. But regardless, he is a physician and he does have a pathology certification. Now, he's not a researcher, right? Which is a big difference we've talked about on this show before. He's not a researcher. He is not a COVID expert. He's never worked with or researched the virus. He has no real credentials as a public policy expert. And again, he got his degree 50 years ago. But let's just say none of that was true. Let's say he was an expert. Let's say he actually wasn't just some physician and he was actually a researcher. Let's say, take one step further and say he was a current virology researcher who did his work on COVID. Let's say all of that is true. It still wouldn't matter because, and here's the thing that dumb people, frankly, have a hard time getting their head around. It's not authority that matters. It's not the letters in front of his name. It's not the title doctor. It's none of that that matters. It's evidence. Evidence isn't what some guy with a degree says. That's not how science works. It's what well-designed, well-controlled, published scientific research, especially if it's independently confirmed, shows. And that is clear. Doesn't take a physician, doesn't take a virologist, doesn't even take a COVID expert to know that. All you have to do is look at the literature. This isn't like the flu. Death rates are much higher. The fact that we have asymptomatic contagion, all of that is different from the flu. The fact that there's a novel virus so we don't have the same immunities to it, that is different from the flu. This is very dangerous. And also, despite what he says, as numerous studies have shown, and not a single real study has disputed, masks are incredibly effective at mitigating this. So it doesn't matter how many letters somebody has after their name. And again, 50 fucking years ago, fucking Star Wars wasn't even out yet when this guy went to medical school. The facts are laid out by what we can prove, not what somebody with letters says. Science isn't based on any kind of authority other than the authority of truth. And the way to get to truth is to look at the evidence, not what some half-wit Canadian who went to school back when TVs were black and white says. Evidence. In science, evidence, not authority, is the path to truth. And Dr. Hodgkinson has neither. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me for Science Faction 514, where you learned all about why Belgium is having an interesting COVID issue, the new Moderna vaccine and why it's going to change the game, the surging cases in the US and the associated lockdowns, and why you shouldn't listen to crackpots with degrees or the dumb people that follow them. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 515.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.